This is the rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Coming up on the show, we'll share the first story in a new series called Uncelebrated, people who fly under the radar yet help the world turn. And later, an interview with Hidden Brain host Shankar Vedantam on how to build healthy habits in the new year. But first, by now, news of the United States' arrest of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has spread coast to coast. But Florida is home to the largest Venezuelan community in the country. How are Floridians reacting to the news? I spoke earlier with WLRN America's editor, Tim Padgett, about it.
Well, the initial reaction, obviously, very early Saturday morning, before sunrise, I was out in Doral, which is a community next door here to Miami, which is, in fact, the largest Venezuelan enclave in the country. In South Florida, we have the largest Venezuelan diaspora community in the U.S. Hundreds of Venezuelans were gathered early Saturday morning at a very popular Venezuelan restaurant called El Arepaso, and they were dancing to nostalgic Venezuelan folk songs. They were celebrating the removal of dictator Nicolas Maduro. But as the day went by, as the weekend went by, and as this week has gone by, more and more the reality has sunk in that although the Trump administration removed Venezuela's dictator, it did not remove Venezuela's dictatorship. The regime is still very much entrenched in power there in Caracas, in the person especially of acting president Delcy Rodriguez, who was Maduro's vice president. That reality has been settling in more and more this week inside the Venezuelan community here in Florida, and it's become unsettling.
And specifically, what are some of the reactions you're hearing from Venezuelans in Florida as this week has gone on? What are they saying?
Well, they want, I think, the priority to be more about regime change, about restoring democracy in Venezuela, rather than what seems to be President Trump's priority, which is gaining U.S. access and control over Venezuela's oil reserves, which, as we know, are the largest in the world. There's a disconnect there between the president and the Venezuelan diaspora, especially here in Florida. They want to see the Democratic opposition being brought a little bit more to the forefront in what they hope will be a transition to democracy in Venezuela, but a transition that really doesn't seem to have a very definite plan right now within the Trump administration. They're particularly concerned about President Trump's apparent attitude toward Democratic opposition leader Marina Corina Machado, who, as you know, won the Nobel Prize just a couple months ago. Jarring and startling and shocking were some of the words that were given to me when they heard President Trump last Saturday suggest erroneously that Machado does not have, quote, either the support or respect inside Venezuela to run the country, to lead the country.
Here in North Central Florida specifically, we heard from a number of Venezuelan people who were scared to speak out about this issue due to fear of reprisal or fear for their loved ones back home. But in other Florida communities, especially down in South Florida where you are, they seem to be much more vocal. Do you think there's a reason for this?
Oh, yes. I think it's because you've seen the South Florida diaspora here be over the years much more engaged, much more directly engaged with the democracy movement in Venezuela. And I think they feel perhaps because of that more comfortable in being more vocal. And they feel that this is a time to be promoting that democratic opposition movement, encouraging it more so than in any other time.
And for those here who are not part of as large of a diaspora or community, how real are those fears of reprisal?
No, there are definite fears. I mean, look at what's going on this week. I mean, that's one of the things that I think really concerns the diaspora about whether or not the Trump administration is completely committed to regime change and democracy restoration of Venezuela, is because we're seeing the remaining regime leaders, including Delcy Rodriguez, in Venezuela, these regime holdovers now mounting a very scary reprisal campaign inside Venezuela. They're rounding up people and checking their cell phones, for example, to see if there's any expressions of support for what happened to Maduro last week, to see if there's any information that links them to the Democratic opposition, that sort of thing. So it is a scary time. You know, I should emphasize that the Florida diaspora does understand they do agree with President Trump that, that this will require some measure of stability inside Venezuela in order to get the transition to democracy on the right path. And they understand that that's why, for example, even an objectionable regime figure like Delcy Rodriguez needs to perhaps be given the reins of the government for a short period to make that stability happen. They just want to make sure, though, that that regime doesn't last too long. And in fact, as one diaspora leader here told me this week, we will not accept Maduro 2.0 at this point.
That was WLRN America's editor Tim Padgett speaking on Floridians' reactions to the arrest of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Do you have ideas for the show? Let us know. Email us at therundown@wuft.org or tap the menu of the WUFT mobile app and tap Talk to Us. We may feature your voice right here on The Rundown. And if you want to listen to previous episodes, visit wuft.org/therundown or find us wherever you get your podcasts. Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. Which Florida town was originally known as Chunky Pond? Do you think you know the answer? Stay tuned to the end of the show to find out. And now it's time for a new series we're calling Uncelebrated, people who fly under the radar yet help the world turn. Today, WUFT's AJ Sheridan shares this story of a person we entrust with a very important task: making sure kids who walk to school get there safely every day.
All right, come on now. Come.
Thank you.
I love this place. I love my children. And it feels good to be 84 and still enjoy myself.
Be standing right behind me so I won't walk on you.
Yeah, because it's dangerous. You don't think about it, but it's dangerous.
My name is Helen Hester. I have been here going on, let's see, if I'm correct. I know I've been here 12 years, but I've been here for two more years because that was in 2023.
I decided to pick me a little flower.
Thank you. I don't even see it. It's so cold. You put it like that on me. I need this distance now.
Now you can put it in the vase.
Everyone, always make sure they're on the sidewalk.
You have to do that. Now, this is what I do. Because I know they have to be at wherever they're going at a certain time. So this is why I do this. Mm-hmm. I get my exercise. And I am breathing hard, but I saw my doctor yesterday.
I do this to keep me going. At my age, and this year in November 1st, I'll be 85. I don't plan to quit. If I couldn't go to work, I go crazy. I'm the only one living in my house. I go crazy as it is for the weekend. It's the truth. Here comes this young lady and her father.
Morning.
He's more protective of the little girl than he is of his son, because he knows damn well that I'm going to take care of them. It means a lot to me, because a lot of them, you know, I know they're not happy, but you can't don't know what's going on in the house. And I don't really need to know what's going on in the house. It's just saying, when you go to school, you need to realize that you're there to learn. And you grow up, eventually you become a beautiful person. And you don't know that until you go from year to year.
That's Cherry in there. When I go to Waffle House some mornings and have breakfast, she's a teacher over here, so she drops her kid off and goes and gets her breakfast, and then she comes back. We're supposed to act like kids. I try my best to be a kid. Yeah.
They're growing up. Eventually, they'll remember those days, because I remember mine when I was with my three other brothers. We had snowball fights on the way to school. Have a good day.
That was Helen Hester. She's a crossing guard at Meadowbrook Elementary School in Gainesville. Her story is part of our series, Uncelebrated, People Who Fly Under the Radar Yet Help the World Turn. Do you have a person you think we should profile for this series? Tell us about it with an email to feedback@wuft.org. You can learn more about this series and hear other stories like it at wuft.org/uncelebrated. This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Still to come, we hear from a local advocate who's working to combat human trafficking in Alachua County. That's after a short break. Stay with us.
Here's Dana Hill, voice of the arts.
The Center for Arts, Migration, and Entrepreneurship will present the third annual Afrofuturism Week, a celebration of creativity across the Black diaspora, running from January 22nd through 31st, with lectures, concerts, art exhibitions, a fashion show, and more. Event times and locations online at AfrofuturismWeek.org. The University of Florida School of Music will present a faculty and guest artist recital featuring the Palm Trio on Sunday, January 18th at 5:10 p.m. in Room 101 of the Music Building on the UF campus in Gainesville. More at arts.ufl.edu.
More information about the arts is available at wuft.org.
Voice of the Arts is supported by UF Health, committed to helping patients achieve their best lives through comprehensive care that delivers nationally recognized outcomes. More at humanprogress.ufhealth.org.
Support for WUFT comes from the Law Office of Nellinger & Associates, a Gainesville law firm practicing law in North Central Florida for over three decades, offering services in probate, litigation, contracts, and more. Information at lawyergainesville.com.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The U.S. just overthrew Venezuela's socialist leader, and America's largest city now has a democratic socialist as mayor. So what does socialism mean to you? That's next time on The Middle, live on Thursday nights at 9 on WUFT.
Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. This Sunday, January 11th, is Human Trafficking Awareness Day, and experts say many children are first led away through conversations and catfishing online. Sherry Kitchens is the CEO and president of the Child Advocacy Center in Gainesville. They helped over 60 children in 2025. The group will host a virtual symposium to expose the techniques of traffickers and what they do next week. The CEO spoke with WUFT's Jasmine Oliphant.
Human trafficking happens more than people actually realize. It happens in every community across the United States, across the world. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and children are often caught up in that situation. Children don't understand that they're being manipulated. They prey upon the most vulnerable, so children who have run away, children who are, you know, looking for love and kind of missing something in their heart that they're not getting what they need at home.
That's like the general age group when it comes to things like this, especially in Gainesville.
You know, we're looking at children under the age of 18. We find that children that have run away from home or who've left or who are out there vulnerable, you know, between 12 and 14, we find a pretty high percentage in that area, and then older teenagers. Doesn't mean that younger children aren't trafficked. They certainly are, but we find that the teenagers are the ones that are being targeted the most in our area.
What do you think that parents, you know, should do? Things that they can teach them or give them tips to look out for?
You know, it is so easy for a kid to start a chat and start chatting with someone that they think is another 15 or 16-year-old, and they're actually talking to a 40-year-old trafficker. A lot of times what happens is their kids are so afraid they're going to get in trouble once they found themselves in a situation that they try to get themselves out of the situation by themselves, and it just gets worse and worse. And so having that trusting relationship that the child can tell them anything, I don't care how bad it is, that the child needs to be able to tell their parent anything, and their parent will stop what they're doing and pay attention and focus on what that child is needing at that point in time.
Is there another real life situation that you would say that is something that was common that was seen in the Gainesville community?
locally in, you know, the Gainesville, Alachua County area, that kids are sometimes trafficked across county lines. So, you know, this, it's really this area. We see a lot of kids that have been trafficked are, you know, malnourished, and, you know, they may for a while have all the nice things and be what we call groomed. The traffickers use techniques that we call grooming to kind of endear that child to them, make that child feel like the trafficker loves them, cares for them, is the only one that does anything for them. And that child just starts to trust the person. And then very quickly, it can turn into a very dangerous situation where the child is being used for labor or for sex. And then the child feels really trapped and is scared to get out.
What are, like, most common myths when it comes to human trafficking?
Well, the most common myth is that, you know, trafficking doesn't happen here in the United States. It's only in other countries, and it's only for people from other countries in our country. And what we find here locally, certainly that happens, but we see a pretty high percentage of our trafficking victims being local kids here that are born and raised in Gainesville, born and raised in Florida, that it only happens to women or girls. And we also do see men and boys that are trafficked.
That was Sherry Kitchens, CEO and president of the Child Advocacy Center in Gainesville, speaking with WUFT's Jasmine Oliphant. During next week's symposium, the organization will have speakers, professional discussions, and information on how we can prevent human trafficking in our community. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. As a reminder, our trivia question this week: which Florida town was originally known as Chunky Pond? The answer's coming up at the end of the show. We'll be back after a quick break. Stay with us.
It is the first left, right, and center of the new year. We are just weeks away from the first midterm primaries. We're going to talk about a few of the races we should be keeping an eye on and what could define this year's elections. Plus, how gambling could change our experience with politics in 2026. I'm David Green. Hope you'll join Mo Alathy, Mike Dupke, and me for the first left, right, and center of the new year.
Thursday evening at 10 on WUFT 89.1, 90.1.
On the next Florida Roundup, the president of the Regional Federal Reserve Bank, Raphael Bostic. Inflation and tariffs, immigration and the job market, interest rates and affordability. What do you want the president of the Regional Federal Reserve Bank to know about your financial situation? Email us now, radio@thefloridaroundup.org, radio@thefloridaroundup.org. I'm Tom Hudson. Then be sure to join us live Friday, noon until 1 on WUFT.
This week on Science Friday, a year after the devastating fires in L.A., new ways to safeguard your home.
We have a choice to keep our houses from burning by doing the preparation.
Plus, the age-old mystery of why ice is, well, slippery.
There has been a great debate going back for centuries. Even Michael Faraday thought about this.
On Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Fridays at 2 on WUFT.
Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. With a new year underway, it's a natural time to think about our goals, even if that process can feel a little overwhelming. One show that knows all about that is Hidden Brain. Last week, they launched You 2.0, a new series designed to help you recognize and overcome the mental barriers that can hold you back from real change. WUFT Morning Edition host Glenn Richards spoke with Hidden Brain host Shankar Vedantam last year while he was on tour celebrating the 10th anniversary of Hidden Brain.
One of the key ideas that I've really been fascinated by is that every time I put together a Hidden Brain episode, I feel like I learn something about my own mind. I learn something about my own relationships, the way I react when I'm under stress or when I'm worried about something. And we explore research, scientific research, that basically says, here's what's happening inside your head, and here's what you can do to actually live a healthier, happier, more fulfilling life. And I tell myself, I'm going to remember to do all of these things when I get back into my real life. And I often fail to do so. And so one of the interesting things that we explore during the tour is the gap between what we know we should do and what we end up doing. And all of us have this gap. This is why we make resolutions on January 1st every year, and we have forgotten those resolutions by March or April every year. There's a gap between what we know we should do and what we should and what we actually do. And one of the themes that I explore in the talk is how this gap comes about and how we might potentially close it.
All right. I could use that. I'm often sitting on my couch recounting what I should be doing instead of sitting on my couch.
Well, all of us have had this experience. You know, we're sitting and watching a television for a long time, and we say, you know, I would be much better off if I was reading a book. Or we're doom scrolling on Twitter, and we say, you know, I should be listening to public radio instead. It would be much more edifying. And so the question is why we don't do this. And of course, the gap is often between what we perceive to be in our short-term interests and what we perceive to be in our long-term interests. And so in general, you know, listening to public radio, reading a book rather than doom scrolling is going to be better for you in the long run. You know that. You know that if you actually spend some time listening to public radio or reading a book, you would feel better, you know, in a week's time or in a month's time. But in the short term, it often comes with a bit of a cost. It's easier to just scroll through Twitter and see cat videos and doom scroll rather than do something that's edifying.
Is there a particular show in the past decade that had an unexpected reaction?
I think every episode of Hidden Brain, we aim to explore something that feels new and interesting about human behavior. And so the short answer is, I've often found myself fascinated by whatever episode is coming out next week. I sometimes joke that I have my favorite episode of Hidden Brain is the one that's coming out next week. And I think that's true for most of the past 10 years. It's also the case that very often when episodes come out, you know, I have finished personally working on that episode maybe a couple of months earlier. And so my mind is so deeply focused on what's coming down the pike that it sometimes takes me a bit of effort to remember what came the previous week.
That was Hidden Brain host Shankar Vedantam speaking with WUFT Morning Edition host Glenn Richards. Listen for Hidden Brain's new U 2.0 series Sundays at 2 p.m. on WUFT or find them online at hiddenbrain.org. As we start the new year, we were curious about people's resolutions, but we also wanted to look back and reflect on 2025. So we sent out WUFT's Maya Labby to ask University of Florida students if they achieved last year's New Year's resolution. Let's take a listen.
My name is Juan Osorio. My New Year's resolution for 2025 was to say yes to more things, and I think I did really good at it. Because of that, I ended up on a 17-hour road trip to Philadelphia. I went to New York City, just done a lot that I normally would have found a way to talk myself out of.
My name is Solara Langston. So one of my New Year's resolutions were to be more active and adventurous, and I went about that by going to the gym more, having a regular routine, and then like exploring nature, doing trails, going to Lake Wahlberg, things like that, and then, yeah, little trips here and there.
My name is Jack Beauchamp. My New Year's resolution 2025, I think, was just to like grow closer to my family. And I'd say I accomplished that. I think going to a college is kind of hard because you're like 4 hours away. But I just make sure to call my mom and my dad every night and just keep in touch with my family back home.
Those were UF students talking about their 2025 New Year's resolutions with WUFT's Maya Labby. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. The team that made this show possible this week includes Dave Bariswain, Dana Hill, Glenn Richards, Andrew Sheridan, and Jasmine Oliphant. Our trivia question this week was, which Florida town was originally known as Chunky Pond? The answer is Bronson in Levy County. That's it for The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina.